As the trial of Officer Derek Chauvin, accused of the death of George Floyd, gets underway, we ask the question today, should we ban live cameras in the courtroom? I'm Scott Ott with Bill Whittle and Stephen Green. This episode of Right Angle brought to you by the members at BillWhittle.com. And gentlemen, I was watching some of the coverage streaming live on CNN of the trial and the interrogating of witnesses. And it occurred to me as I watched what a horrible thing this is, because I was watching just a few minutes of a trial that's going to go on for who knows how many hours, countless hours and days that this will go on. And I saw 20 minutes of it. And then the CNN anchor came back to the studio and replayed for me the most dramatic moment of that 20 minutes of the trial. And that little clip, of course, is going to go into regular circulation and run with frequency. Every time they're not showing the trial, they'll show the most dramatic moments highlight reel. Stephen Green, I am interested in my lunatic way in justice. And it seems to me that no matter which side of the aisle you're on, whether you think this officer ought to go to prison for a very long time, or you think that he was railroaded and was not personally responsible for this death, either way, you've got to be saying to yourself, this is no way to conduct a legal system with live streaming video so that people see little bits and pieces of it. When this trial's all over, Steve, if they do not convict Derek Chauvin and sentence him to a long period of time in jail, what do you think happens in the streets of that city and many others?
Oh, it feels like 2020 all over again, doesn't it? Or it will if that's what happens. Yeah, this isn't justice. This is mob justice. The verdict's already been rendered. It's just a case of whether or not the jury sees it that way. And if they don't, their entire city, in fact, cities across the nation, will be made to pay for them failing to live up to the verdict that's already been settled. And I don't know if the guy should go to jail or not. I don't know if he should be found guilty or not. I haven't seen enough of the evidence. I'm not in that courtroom having to deliberate those things, and I'm glad I'm not. I've been saying we need to get the cameras out of there since the O.J. Simpson trial back in the mid-90s. And not because I was unhappy with the verdict, although clearly I very much was. But we watched Judge Ito apparently get bullied by the defense. And I think that was the case because he knew the cameras were on him. We are all different when the cameras are on us. Just to give you an idea, it seems like a very simple thing to sit here for a couple, 3 hours on a Tuesday and tape these shows talking with friends. And in a sense, it is. It is not real work. We're not out there digging ditches or anything. On the other hand, you're always aware of the camera. You are on. And it is, if it's not physically draining, of course, but at the end of a 2 or 3 hour right angle shoot, I'm like, man, that was a long day, even though it wasn't. The cameras change the way we behave, and they don't belong in a courtroom. I sat on a jury a few years ago. It was a terrible, terrible case. Thank God there were no cameras in there. It was a child porn case. And I practically begged to be let off this jury, and the judge, who I actually came to respect quite a bit, stuck me on that panel anyway. I couldn't get out of the thing. And we voted to convict the guy, but there was something vital missing, and all of us jurors, or I think all of us, noticed that it was missing during the case, which was how the police came in possession of this guy's hard drive. And we had to assume that there was chain of evidence, that there had been a warrant, and that all the strictures had been followed, because here it was in the courtroom, and you have to have that amount of faith. It wasn't until after the trial, when Judge Kane came in to talk to us, kind of debrief us a little after the trial. He's a great guy. He's the only judge I vote to retain. And he filled in that missing piece. He told us the same guy was suspected of sales fraud on eBay, and his computer was seized for that, and that is how the police stumbled on this other more horrible thing. Now, if you were just getting the highlights of this from TV, let's leave out the child porn angle, because that is so sensationalistic that everyone's just going to say mob the guy, right? Which it's really hard to resist that thought. if you're just watching this on TV and you don't understand how the police came to be in this evidence, you would be going, oh, my God, how could a jury ever vote to convict this guy when clearly the police got this evidence illegally? But that wasn't the case. What is missing from the TV cameras, what's missing from those little 2-minute news reports with all the drama, is the dispassionate attitude you need in a court of law, the dispassionate attitude you need as a juror, even as a even as an attorney. There are laws and rules and procedures and traditions that must be followed in order to get justice, not the verdict you want, not the result you want, but to get justice. And you don't get that when everything is about expressing your feels in front of a camera. This isn't TikTok. But right now we live in an age where you don't demonstrate virtue by creating something. You demonstrate virtue by showing how angry or how sad you are over something somebody else did. And you just can't run a court of law that way.
Bill, if you've ever had an experience where you've been somewhere and then later saw coverage of that event, you realize that there can be a pretty significant difference between what the camera captures, the things that are inside of the frame, and what the overall experience is like. My big concern here is people who watched 9 or 10 minutes of video that was shot by a bystander on a smartphone, they think they already know what happened one way or the other. They think that they have a full understanding of it because they saw it. They were witnesses to it. And then people who catch a snippet of the trial here and there, or just catch CNN's packaging of the most dramatic moments of the trial, they think they know what happened because they saw it. They heard it with their own ears. They know what happened. Bill, is there any way that we're going to be able to teach the public that a trial is not like they see on TV? It's not boiled down to a few dramatic moments where somebody says you can't handle the truth. There are details of evidence and testimony and interrogation of witnesses, all of this stuff that comes together in two separate cases. How do we back off of the precipice of this mob justice thing, as Steve called it?
We would start by teaching civics in school again. That would be the first thing I would do.
Yeah.
There's so much to unpack here. You mentioned that the problem with the camera is that while the camera does show you what's going on inside the frame, it doesn't show you what's going on outside the frame. It doesn't provide context, and you can use a camera to make a small group of people look like a very large group of people. But there's another aspect to the camera that is exclusionary. And that's not just what's outside the frame. It's like, it also includes what happened before the frame started and what happened after the last frame ended. There's one salient piece of information that flips the entire perception of this George Floyd case. And the media has known this piece of information for a year now. It was never, ever, ever broadcast or anything. The salient point on the George Floyd case is he said, I can't breathe before he went down to the ground. If you know that information, then everything changes completely, completely. If you don't know that information, then you get what we got last year, which is thousands of protesters saying, I can't breathe because the policeman's knee was on his neck. You get into the whole thing about the procedures he was taught and so on and so on and so on and so on and so on. But all you need to know about this case is, this is not to say the policeman's not guilty, by the way. I'm not making that point, although it certainly mitigates it. If people knew that George Floyd said, I can't breathe before he contacted the police officer, the entire perspective on this case would be utterly different. And I saw the video, and all I saw was the beginning frame and the last frame and everything in between. I said, my God, that's just unbearable. I can't believe I'm watching this. But when you find out that this guy was in respiratory distress before he went down to the ground, it's a whole different story now, completely different story. But the people, two more things just real quick. You talk about juries and so on. I was on a very minor jury 3-4 years ago, and I was the foreman. And it was a trial of a woman who had interfered with a police officer in the course of his duty. She tried to basically attack a cop while he was arresting her boyfriend. And we got in there and we heard the testimony of the police officers. The defense was she's not big enough to really have interfered with the officer. And I'm saying, well, you've just admitted that she did. So that's that. But the point of it is, Scott, was even on a case like this, we were fighting this enormous tide of people saying, no, that's not right. He's lying. Well, what makes you believe he's lying? Can't be that. You know, they're waiting for the twist. They're waiting for the twist because every single crime drama they've ever seen has a twist. Everything they've ever learned about trials has a twist. Even if they started back with Perry Mason, there's a twist. And so what makes good drama is not what makes good law or good civics for that matter. And we see it all the time now where juries are saying, yeah, that's what he said. And that's what the evidence indicates. But I want to know what's really going on. And I had to stand there and say to the, you know, to this entire group of people, we don't get to speculate on what may have happened. All we have to work with is what was presented in that room. And there was no counter to this claim. And that's what we have to rule on. So we got one conviction and she was acquitted on a different charge. So there's all of that. The thing that is the most telling on a larger scale is this. The country already knows whether he's innocent or guilty. The news media and the politicians and everybody else has already passed judgments on this. The whole Black Lives Matter movement is a result of people having already come to a conclusion about this case and knowing what the answer is. But I think the biggest takeaway is this. If he is found guilty, the people who believe he was innocent will be outraged by it, but nothing is going to happen. If he's found guilty, nothing will happen. If he's found not guilty, cities across America are going to burn. And what does that tell you about the politics of the people who hold those two positions? Since nobody really knows if he's guilty or not, since we haven't been in the jury box, and we haven't heard the case yet, what does it tell you for us to know, you know, and I know with an absolute certainty that if he is found guilty, the people will be upset. The people who support the police will be upset and say it's a miscarriage of justice. But if he's found not guilty, cities are going to burn and people are going to die. What does that tell you about the two different political opinions out there in America today?
What this says to me, the whole thing, and frankly, it's not the first case that I've thought this way, is that living in a society that is guided by the rule of law is hard. And we have not devoted ourselves to the kind of mental rigor required to live under the rule of law. It's not the rule of snap judgment. It's not the rule of what I saw. It's the rule of law. And we, in many ways, like a legislature, goes to the Capitol to represent the people who elected the members of the legislature, a jury is impaneled to represent us. That's their job. Now, it's a different form of representation there, but you have to have a system that the people can trust to say, when 12 average Americans are put in that jury box and they get a chance to hear all the evidence, we need to be able to trust that they made their best effort and the attorneys made their best effort and the judge made his best effort and everybody came to something as close as we can get to justice, to something that actually treats everybody with fairness and speaks truth and calls facts facts and calls opinions opinion. But we are willing to watch a news program for a few minutes and make a snap judgment about what happened. I don't know what happened. I saw the video. I read the transcript. I read the coroner's report. I don't know what happened. And I think we have to be, the problem with the rule of law is it calls for a high degree of humility. It calls for a degree of humility beyond what most of us are capable of. But I think sometimes we need to take off our black robe and step down from that podium and say, I don't know. I wasn't there. We have a process. We're going to trust the process. Will it always come out right? No, it won't. Is there an appeals process if it doesn't? Yes, there is. Is there an appeals process after that? Yes, there is. And our goal should be not to get our preferred outcome. I don't want this guy to be exonerated. I don't want him to be convicted. I want justice. I want the truth. I want things facts to come out, and I want unbiased people to make a judgment based on the facts laid before them, and they see a lot more facts than I do. So for the record, I'm going to trust this process and see how it comes out. And if I don't like how it came out, or if I think there's some question about it, then there's a process for that too. But I think all of us need to step back a little bit and say, do we want a country where the rule of law is in place? Or are we so going to, in the worst possible way of using this word, democratize the rule of law that it becomes what Stephen Green said? And that's just nothing but the opinion of the mob. And if it's just the opinion of the mob, more people are going to get hurt, less justice will be done. For Stephen Green and Bill Whittle, I'm Scott Ott. Thanks to the members at BillWhittle.com for making Right Angle possible.